You must improve your education systems, reigniting the spirit of inquiry and the joy of learning in your schools. I gave you some wonderful clues on how you might do that in Conversations with God, Book 2. I'll not repeat them here. Rather, I'll invite you to review them and put them into practice.
Put them into practice?
Life is a process of recreation. You are invited to empower the world to recreate the experience of school in the next grandest version of the greatest vision you ever held about what that is.
Recreating school is not all that we need to do. We need to make it clear that we are never going to ignite the thinking process and encourage independent inquiry. If we allow our children to spend 20 hours a week watching television, then 20 hours more glued to video games, children will not learn very much that way.
On the contrary, they will learn a great deal. They will learn how to seek instant gratification, how to expect all life problems to resolve themselves in 28 and a half minutes, and how to vent their frustrations over problems that don't instantly resolve themselves by using violence.
Entertainment industry executives deny that TV, movie, and video images, however violent, are responsible for young people's violent behavior.
Are these the same executives who sell Super Bowl commercials for $500,000 apiece, claiming that they can influence behaviors in 60 seconds?
Well, yes.
I see.
But surely it can't be simple video games that are desensitizing kids to death and violence. I mean, kids know it's just a game.
Do you know what some police and military academies use to teach professionals quick hand-eye coordination and to shoot to kill without emotion?
Video games?
I only asked a question. I'll leave you to discover the answer. But could you think of a faster, more effective teaching tool?
Oh, man, I shouldn't have put this all in here.
Why not?
People don't want social commentary from me. They certainly don't want it from you. This is a book about God, and God isn't supposed to have opinions on social issues of the day.
You mean real life?
I mean political and social issues. You're supposed to stick to spiritual matters, and so am I.
Is there any matter more spiritual than how to stop your children from killing each other? Do you need many more Columbine high schools to get you to understand that you've got a real problem here?
We know we've got a problem. We just don't know how to solve it.
You do know how to solve it. You simply have not gathered the will to do so. First, spend more time with your children. Stop acting as if they're on their own from age 11. Get involved and stay involved in their lives. Talk to their teachers. Make friends with their friends. Exert an influence. Have a real presence in their lives. Don't let them slip away from you. Second, take an active stand against violence and role models of violence in their lives. Images do teach. Indeed, imagery teaches faster and imprints deeper than words. Insist that those in charge of retelling your cultural story, movie makers, TV producers, video game manufacturers, and other purveyors of imagery, from comic books to trading cards, create a new cultural story with a new ethic, an ethic of nonviolence. Third, do what it takes to make sure that instruments of violence and tools of violence are unavailable to your children and your teenagers. Prevent easy access and effortless acquisition. Most important, eliminate violence from your life. You are the greatest model for your children. If they see you using violence, they will use violence.
Does that mean we shouldn't spank our children?
Can you think of no other way to teach those that you say you deeply love? Is startling them, scaring them, or hurting them the only way you can think of to instruct them? Yours is a culture that has long used physical pain as a punishment for unwanted behavior, not only in children, but in adults. You actually kill people to get people to stop killing people.
It is insanity to use the energy that created a problem to seek to solve the problem.
It is insanity to repeat the behaviors you want to stop in order to stop them.
It is insanity to model behaviors all over your society that you say you do not want your offspring to copy.
And the highest insanity is pretending that none of this is happening, then wondering why your children are acting insane.
Are you saying that we are all insane?
I am defining insanity. It is up to you to decide who and what you are. You are deciding that every day. Every act is an act of self-definition.
You've been using some pretty tough words here.
That's what friends are for. You want to know what it's like having a friendship with God? This is what it's like. Friends tell you the truth. Friends say it like it is. Friends don't pander to you or tell you only what they think you want to hear. Yet friends don't tell you what is so and then leave you to deal with it. Friends are always there for you, offering constant support, a helping presence, and unconditional love. That's what God does. That's what this ongoing dialogue is all about.
How long will this dialogue be going on? I thought it would be over at the end of the CWG trilogy.
It will go on as long as you choose for it to go on.
So, will there be another book after this?
There will definitely be another book after this, as I indicated to you years ago. But it will not be a dialogue book.
It won't?
No.
Well, what kind of book will it be?
A book that speaks with one voice.
Your voice.
Our voice.
Our voice?
Your conversation with God has led to your friendship with God. And your friendship with God will lead you to your communion with God. We will speak with one voice in communion with God, and it will be an extraordinary document.
All of the With God books have been extraordinary.
Indeed.
Will there be any more dialogue books where you and I just talk?
If you wish for there to be, there will be.
Well, I enjoy these conversations immensely because they really make me think. I'm sometimes surprised, though, at how opinionated you are. You know, for a God with no preferences, you seem to express quite a few.
Giving directions is not the same as stating preferences. If you say you wish to go to Seattle and you're on the road to San Jose, and if you stop to ask directions, is it announcing a preference to tell you that you are on the wrong road? That you have made a wrong turn? Is it being opinionated to tell you how you can get where you say you want to go?
You've used this analogy before. You've said this to me before.
And I will say it to you over and over again, so long as you keep trying to make me into a God who needs something from you. I tell you this, I need nothing from you. Do you imagine me to be such an impotent God that I would need something from you and not be able to get it? Do you think there's something that I want to have happen, but that I just don't know how to make it happen? If I needed you to go to Seattle, do you think I'd be wholly unable to get you to do that? It is not like that. It is like this. You tell me where you seek to go, and I tell you how to get there. Humans have been telling God for thousands of years what kind of life they'd like to have. You've declared to me and to each other that you wish to live long lives of peace, harmony, health, and abundance. I, in turn, have been telling you for thousands of years how you can do that.
I am telling you once again here, therefore, let those who have ears to hear listen.
Yes, but as I said, sometimes people don't want to hear that. Some people have not liked the parts of our dialogue when you've gotten political or controversial on social issues. And it isn't just God we don't want to hear from. I learned that when I was in the media. I had to tone down a lot of my own opinions when I got on the radio. Larry LaRue was the first of many bosses to tell me that. I worked with Larry for about 8 months, then I got another break. Although today I wouldn't call such an event a break, because today I know that there is no such thing as luck, and that life proceeds out of your intentions for it.
That's good. That's important. It's vital if you're going to have a friendship with God, a real working friendship, for you to understand how God works. People are forever calling the good outcomes in life breaks, luck, coincidence, serendipity, fate, or whatever. The bad outcomes, the hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, sudden deaths, they call acts of God. No wonder you had this idea that you have to be afraid of me. Your whole culture supports the idea. It is reflected in everything you say and how you say it. It is everywhere in your languaging. Now, I will tell you that what you call the good things that happen to you are also acts of God. No two people meet by chance, and nothing occurs by accident. Do you imagine that Larry was sitting there, just the right person, at just the right time, with just the right attitude, by a stroke of luck? Consider the possibility that you and Larry did not meet by chance at that time, on that date, but that like a supporting player standing in the wings waiting for his cue, he marched on stage, said his lines, and made his exit. And the play, your play, went on, just as it always goes on, just as it is going on right now, with you writing the script through your every thought about tomorrow, with you directing the scenes with your every verbal command, with you acting them out with your every deed.
That's awesome. That could be a great depiction of how it really is.
Could be.
Like I said, that's a great depiction of how it really is. And now, of course, I know that. After my conversation with God, all of this became clear. But back then, I thought it was just another break when one of our better on-air talents, a fellow named Johnny Walker, left the station 2 months after I arrived to take a job in Richmond, Virginia. So I'm very okay with admitting that I was thrilled to see my first byline on the front page of the Evening Capital, and with acknowledging that I'm still thrilled today each time I see my name on the cover of a new book, even though I find myself saying that these books were not written by me, but through me.
You have written these books, and it is very okay to say that you have. It is not necessary for you or anyone else to hide your light under a bushel. I have made that point before. Unless you learn to acknowledge who you are and what you have done, you can never acknowledge others for who they are and what they have done. It is true that you have been inspired by me to put these principles into print. It is true that I've given you the words to write. Does that make it any less your achievement? If it does, then you should not honor Thomas Jefferson for writing the Declaration of Independence, Albert Einstein for articulating the theory of relativity, Madame Curie, Mozart, Rembrandt, Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, or anyone else who has done anything of note in the history of the human race, because I inspired them all. My son, I cannot tell you how many people to whom I have given wonderful words to write who have never written them. I cannot tell you how many people to whom I have given wonderful songs to sing who have never sung them. Do you want the list of people to whom I have given gifts who have never used them? You have used the gifts I have given you, and if that isn't something to be thrilled about, I don't know what is.
You have a way of making people feel good about themselves just when they're tempted to start feeling bad.
Only with those who listen, my friend. Only with those who listen. You'd be amazed at how many people are in the I am not to feel good about myself trap, or the no credit is to come to me belief system. The trick is not to do what you do for acknowledgement, but rather as an expression of who you are. Yet, to be acknowledged for who you are does not make you less of that, but only makes you want to experience more of it. The true master knows this, which is why the true master acknowledges everyone for who they really are, and encourages others to acknowledge themselves as well, and never to deny, in the name of modesty, the most magnificent aspect of the self. Jesus announced himself, declared himself unequivocally, to all who could hear. So too has every master who has walked your planet. Therefore, announce yourself, declare yourself, then move fully into the beingness of that which you have declared. Recreate yourself anew in every moment of now, in the grandest version of the greatest vision ever you held about who you are. In this will I be glorified, for the glory of God is the glory of you, expressed wondrously indeed.
You know what I like about you?
What?
You give people permission to feel the feelings they've always wanted to feel. You give people back to themselves.
That's what friends are for.
How could people not feel optimistic about themselves or about the world with someone like you around?
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Well, I've always been optimistic, even before I knew you as I know you now. Even when I thought that God was an angry, punishing God, it still seemed like he was on my side. I mean, I grew up thinking that, because I was taught that. After all, I was both Catholic and American. Who can beat that? We were told as children that the Catholic Church was the one true church. We were also told that God looked with special favor on the United States of America. We even stamped in God We Trust on all of our coins. And in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag, we declared ourselves to be one nation under God. I considered myself very lucky, being born into the best faith, in the best country. How could anything I do go wrong?
Yet it is this very teaching of superiority that has caused so much pain in your world. The idea deeply ingrained in a people that they are somehow better than others may give them an extra measure of confidence, but it also too often translates how can anything we do go wrong into how can anything we do be wrong. This is not self-confidence, but a dangerous brand of hubris that allows an entire population to believe itself to be in the right, no matter what it says or does. People of many faiths and nations have believed and taught this through the years, producing a righteousness so huge that it desensitized them to any other experience, including the abject suffering of others. If there's one thing which it would benefit you to remove from your various cultural myths, it is this idea that by means of some magic ingredient you have been made better than some other humans. That yours is the superior race or the superior faith, the better country or the better political system, the higher approach or the higher way. I tell you this, the day that you cause cultures to do this is the day that you change the world.